Yesterday we started the Mishnah on Daf Chav Tesam and Aleph Ketzad Bodkim Sa'edim, and we discussed the questions that the Dayanim of the Beis Din asked the Edim one by one in private chambers, each one separately. And it seems from the language of the Mishnah and the way that we interrogate the Edim is that we have to guarantee for sure that this Edus is something that we can depend upon, and therefore we want to know exactly what the Edim heard, what they saw and what they heard. Sometimes the Edim will give us a sort of a general feeling that, yeah, we know that Reuven has to pay Shimon. But when we ask them in a more aggressive way, more specific way, well, how do you know that Reuven has to pay Shimon? So the aide says, well, I heard him say that he owes the money. You know, I heard his confession. Or instead of saying he heard his admission, he says, somebody else told me that he is chayav, that he was there and he saw the halvah. And in all these cases, Lo Amar Klum, basically the Edus is completely invalidated. And it's based on two principles. Principle number one is that it's not enough for a person to say, I owe money. That's not a halachic binding admission. So that even though the Edim heard Reuven say, Ani chayev kesef leploni, I owe so-and-so this amount of money, even though that's true that he heard, that the Edim heard him say that, but that's not an admission of Hodas Bal Din, that's not a binding admission, and we're going to see the Gemara why. And then we have a second principle here called Eid Mipi Eid Posel, that if your Edus is based on what you heard from somebody else, that's not valid Edus, you have to have heard it yourself, you were there at the scene, and if that first aid doesn't come in personally into Beis Din, then we don't have Edus. And the Mishnah concludes by saying that what the witnesses have to say is Bifanenu Hodalo, in our presence, he, meaning the defendant, admitted Shuchayev Lo Masayim Zuz. So we'll see exactly what the significance is of Bifanenu. That's the key word here, Bifanenu. And then we take in the second witness, we interrogate him, and if we find that they're both, there's a coincidence of their Edus, then we accept their Edus. Then we had a long discussion about Rov, about the final verdict that has to be based on the majority of the judges. That's based on Achiravim Lahatos. So therefore, if two out of three say Chayv, or two out of three say Zakai, we have a final Psak. But what happens if one of them says Eini Yodea, he doesn't know, so we have two other judges that know, and they might have an agreement, but nevertheless we need three judges, so therefore we have to add judges to replace the one judge that said any day he doesn't know. And finally, we discuss the fact that we take the Gadol Machnisin Oson, that we finish with the Edim, then we're ready for the final verdict. Then we bring in the litigants and the Dayan, who's the most important Dayan. He's the one who's going to make the proclamation. And then we spoke about Lo Selech Rochil, that there should be nobody should reveal which Dayan said what. You know, it's very tempting for the Dayan to say to the litigant who was found to be Chayav, if the judgment went against him, it's very comfortable and attractive for the Dayan to say, well, you know, I was the one who said that you were potter, you know, you were zakai, but he's not allowed to do that because that's going to create enmity, and that's going to be megalasod. That's called lo selech rochil v'amecha. So that's more or less an overview of the Mishnah that we studied yesterday. And now we're ready for the Gemara itself. Okay, let me just organize this for a second. Okay, fine. So the Gemara again here on Daf Chav Tesam and Aleph, the first line of the Gemara, Hechi Amrinan Lehu. What should we exactly say to the Eid? Now this part of the Gemara, which we touched upon yesterday, is a clarification of the first part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, if you remember, says that ma'ayimim aleihem, those two words, ma'ayimim aleihem, that we have to instill a certain fear in the hearts of the witness. That's the responsibility of the judges to do so. And there could be three shitos here in the Gemara exactly how we do that. What exactly do we say to the witnesses in order to scare them, to make sure that they don't perjure themselves? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, we quote a pasuk in Mishle, and from this pasuk in Mishle, we derive that Eidu Sheker, that if they lie, that's going to cause the termination of rains. There won't be rains coming down from the heavens. And Rav is not happy with that because he thinks that the Eidim are not going to be impressed by that. And they'll say to themselves, well, you could have years and years of drought, but we'll find a way of supporting our family. You know, we'll have a creative idea. We have our own special talents. Rava says that we should quote a different pasuk in Mishle also about the magefa, about the plague that's going to come about through Eidu Sheker. Ravashi says, even so, the Edom will say to themselves, that's not a problem for us. There were many years of Magefa, but we survived it. They're not afraid of that. Until we get to Ravashi, and he says that we tell them that they are lowering themselves if they're testifying falsely. And the one who's going to be very happy if they testify falsely is the one who gave them a bribe. And basically, they're humiliating themselves. So ultimately, the Iyum expressed itself in touching on a person's self-image. You know, every human being wants to look himself in the mirror and feel that he's something of worth. He's a person of worth, of value. And if you lower yourselves to this level, then basically you are humiliating yourself. Okay, so that's as far as Ketzad Me'aymim. How do we put the fear into the hearts of the Edim? But now we get to the main subject for our Livud, and that is Hodas Baldin. What exactly is Hodas Baldin? So the Mishnah says, Im Omar, if the witnesses say, Hu Omar Li, you know, we heard it from someone else, that's not sufficient, and the Eidus is not reliable. But Ad Sheyomru, they have to say, Bifanenu Hodolo Shuchayavlo Masayim Zuz. And again, as I said before, we emphasize the word Bifanenu. What is the meaning of the word Bifanenu? So Gemara says that this will be clarified based on the statement of Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to see that many Amoroim accepted this statement, this ruling of Rabbi Yehuda. The Omer of Yehuda Merav HaRotzev, a person wants to confess, he wants to admit to his friend that he really owes his money, and he knows therefore that there's going to be ample evidence that he has to pay the money. There are going to be two witnesses that can testify on his hodah, on his admission. Is Tzorech Sheyomar, he has to say to these two Eidim, Atem Eidai. In other words, it's not enough that two witnesses saw through the window and heard that Reuven made a statement to Shimon, I owe you money. So Shimon said to Reuven, you owe me 1,000, and Shimon and Reuven responded, yes, I owe you money. That's not enough. Even if two witnesses were to come into Bezdin and say that they were passing by and they actually heard this and they saw this. What we need is atem edai, that a confession of chiyuv, which means hodas baldin, is only valid. A lova who says, I admit that I owe you money, I borrowed money, I didn't pay you back, and so forth and so on. He can always change his mind after a hodah, unless he said the magic words, atem edai. He was aware of the fact that there were two witnesses here, and he in fact invited them, and we'll see if that's important, but he invited them to testify. He set up, like, in a sense, almost like a mini courtroom in which he says, in front of the court, in this case, in front of Edom, I'm going to admit that I owe this person money. So then, in such a case, we said, Atem Edai, then the Edom, the witnesses, can testify, and as a result of that testimony, they could be Mechayev Reuven to pay based on this admission. Now, Rashi explains that how does the Mishnah support Rav Yehuda? Rav Yehuda says that a confession is not valid, it's not binding, unless the Lova says, Atem Edai. Where is the proof in our Mishnah? And the answer is, if you look carefully at the Mishnah's language, it says, Ad sheyomru v'fanenu hodalo shu chayav. If the din was that witnesses could testify, even if they weren't designated to by the lova to be the witnesses, as long as they heard it, then the Mishnah should have used a different language. Instead of saying b'fanenu hodalo, it should have said shamanu shahodalo. What shamanu? We heard his admission. That would have conveyed the message to us that all we need is witnesses that heard his admission. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah doesn't say shamanu shahodalo, but rather the Mishnah says bifanenu hodalo. Bifanenu means that the lov has to be what's called miyached edim. He has to designate edim. And he has to say in front of them, atem edai, you be my witnesses. I'm now appointing you to testify on what I'm about to admit in your presence. So for example, the Rush and the Tur write that if a malve, a lender, demands payment from a lover, from the borrower, and the malve says to the edim, atem edai, and the lova responds, kain, tiyu li edim. So in other words, even though it was the malva who initiated and evoked the admission on the part of the lova, the malva was the one who was tovea first, and the malva said, I am bringing in edim, and he specifically designates two people as his witnesses. If the lova responds, kain, tiyu li edim, yes, you will be the edim on this hodah, then that's meaningful. What if the lova says nothing? That's called shtika. Then the Rush and the Tur say that that's sufficient as well. Why? Because the malva said atem edai. So when Rabbi Yehuda Marav says that the precondition for a valid binding hodah is tzarech yom sheyomar atem edai, it means that either the lova says atem edai, that's the simple case, or the malva says atem edai, and in the presence of the lova, the malva designates these two witnesses, and the lova says fine, so to speak, he's shoseik. Other Rishonim say no, it's not enough that he's shoseik, but he has to say ken, tiyu li edim. He has to actually agree and appoint them officially as his witnesses. Now, we have even a further chiddush here. Not only is it enough, according to the Rosh and the Tur, that the malva says atem edai and the lova just is shoseik, but we have the Rambam who takes us a step further. And the Rambam in Perek Zayin Milchus Toim V'Nitan writes that ein tzarech lomar atem edai. It's not always the case that it's an absolute requirement that the malva, the lova, say atem edai. Ella kishelo amar b'loshen hodah. I'll explain in a minute. Aval im amar b'loshen hodah, then ain't tzarich lomar atem edai. According to the Rambam, in theory, again, how to flesh out the details is going to be more difficult, but the conceptual principle according to the Rambam is that there are two types of lashonos, two types of formulations or expressions that came from the mouth of the lova, of the moda. Sometimes it's what the Rambam calls derech sicha. Derech sicha means, you know, they're talking about it and they're, you know, they're telling stories, they're schmoozing. That's called derech sicha. So he says, I owe you money. That's not valid. That would only become a valid binding hodah if he said, atem edai. But if he uses the lova, not a lashon of derech sicha, but rather a lashon of hodah, like in a sense he uses a formal kind of language that indicates his seriousness. He didn't just by the by mention, oh yeah, I owe you some money, but rather he says, I hereby admit that I owe you the money. You asked me for the money, I owe you the money, I'll pay you the money. Then if the Edom were there at that time, that's enough, and there's no need for the malva to say, for the lova to say, atem edai. Again, I want to repeat this. According to many Rishonim, when Rabbi Yehuda and our Gemara says, Tzarech sheyomar atem edai, we have to take that literally. We may be a little bit more liberal and expand it if the malva says atem edai and the lova agrees. But nevertheless, this formulation of atem edai is an absolute prerequisite in Hodah. The Rambam, on the other hand, says atem edai is only necessary when it's possible that what the lova was doing is he was just saying nonchalantly, derech sicha, as he calls it, that I owe you the money. Then, in order to jack that up to a binding, formal hodah spaldin, you need atem edai. But if the malva asks for the money, and the lova says, I owe you the money, and I'll pay you the money, that's a serious admission, and that's hodah hamachayeves, it's a valid hodah, and he doesn't have to say atem edai. The Ran tries to embellish this Rambam, and he says that the reason for this Rambam is that since he made this statement in a serious way, that he owes the money in front of two Edim, obviously, if he was just joking around, he'd be afraid to joke around in front of two witnesses. That's not a good place to start joking around and just schmoozing about, oh, I owe you some money. No, that's not a good thing, smart thing to do. If he said it in front of two Edim, then that gives it a certain gespanka, I don't know how to say that in English, a certain, you know, a teeth to it. It has a certain binding legal effect. And that's enough. You don't need atem edai. However, the Rishonim, not all the Rishonim, but many Rishonim reject this, and they say, let's take the Gemara at face value, literally, that in all cases, to get a binding hodas baldin, it's not enough that he said something seriously in the presence to Edom, he has to actually appoint them as his Edom, atem edai. Now, I'm tempted to say the following, and you could be the jury, you could reject what I say, because I don't know if it's right, but we always discuss, and I've mentioned it many times in the past, the difference between what's called Edus L'Kiyum HaDavar and Edus L'Birur HaDavar. So for example, in Kiddushin, it's not enough that two witnesses happened to be passing by, and through the window they heard Reuven say to Leah, Hareyat Mekudeshes Li B'Tabasu, but rather, we need Edus L'Kiyum HaDavar, which means that the Edom have to be invited from the get-go, up front, for the purpose of creating Ishus, for the purpose of creating a Kiddushin. And the Baal says to the Edim, I'm going to appoint you as my Edim, that's called Atem Edai, and now the Kiddushin that I'm about to implement will become valid. So the Edim participate, they play a major role in making the Kiddushin into a Kiddushin. That's called Edus L'Kiyum HaDavar. In the case of a murder, I don't need that the murderer say to two witnesses that Atem Edai. All I need is to evidence and clarify that he actually killed him, and for that we need two Edim L'Birur HaDavar, just to clarify. What would be the status of Hodas Baldin? If you had asked me intuitively, I would say all you need is Edus L'Birur HaDavar. All you need is Edim to clarify what was going on, that the Lova made a serious admission. He wasn't just joking around nonchalantly, and by the by, he said, I owe you money, but he really was serious about his Hodah. So then, I need Edus L'Birur HaDavar. But yet, Rabbi Yehuda uses the term Atem Edai, and some Rishonim say, it's got to be Atem Edai. It's as if we're elevating the statement of the Lova to the status of Mea Edom Domi. It's a Hodah with a Chal Shem Hodah. It's a halachic legal category that requires Edus Lekiyum HaDov, Atem Edai. What do I gain by this? I want to explain why it's not coincidental that just like in Evan Ezer, which are the laws of Kiddushin, the halacha is that the Mekadesh says to the Edom Atem Edai. Here also in Odas Baldin, we find the same identical language, Atem Edai. That's not a coincidence. Because just like in Kiddushin, you have to appoint the Edom to be Edus L'Kiyum HaDov, they're part of making something into an entity, a legal entity, in this case, issues. Well, the same thing might be in other cases. So too, in Hodah, we have to change the nature of the Hodah from some sort of a birur to a kiyum, to give it a Chal Hashem Hodah. It's got to be a legally binding Hodah. It's like today, what you would say out of court maybe has no significance. Even if you sign a document, it could be the document has to be notarized. There are all sorts of legal restrictions and requirements that have to be fulfilled. You know, if you, for example, claim that you own a piece of real estate, is it registered in the iria, in the municipality? You know, all sorts of legal requirements. It could be that Odas Baldin has to be converted, has to be transformed into a legally binding a statement. It takes on a new status as Edus, because Odas Baldin Kimeya Edim Gami, and in order to create and effectuate that change, you need Edus Lekiyum HaDov, and that's called Atem Edai. Alternatively, it's really a borrowed term here, Atem Edai. It really doesn't mean what we think, what it sounds like. There's no such thing as Edus Lekiyum HaDov in Odas Baldin, but rather we need Edus Lebir HaDov. But how are we Mavare here? Under what circumstances can we clarify in absolute certainty that the Lova was serious about it, and for that we need Atem Edai? The Rambam would be more, shall I say, attractive if we're talking about Edus Lebir HaDov, because the Rambam says you don't always need Atem Edai. Hodas Baldin is binding unless it was Derech Sicha. It was Derech Sicha. You know, he was in a different context. He they were sitting around drinking beer, and he said to him, "Hey, what about the money you owe me?" So he says, "Yeah, you know, I owe you the money." That certainly needs Atem Edai. That's Midin Bir HaDov. But those Rishonim who have an absolute precondition that Odas Baldin was only binding when he said Atem Edai, they might hold that you need Edus Lekiyum HaDov. You actually transform his Hodah and give it the status of Odas Baldin.
Yeah, concept of fear of if there's a third aid there, Miyakarov, one of the Edom, do we have that? Well, I mean, if you designate Edom, that takes care of that, but if I had a third person that happens to be there.
So that would depend upon this. Right. If you're holding it, say, this Lebir HaDov, then you have to know whether Nimtzech and Mekarv Pasul depends on Re'iyah, depends on Haggadah, and so forth and so on. It could be, it would passel the whole group. But if you hold this Edus Lebir HaDov, and Atem Edai means I'm pointing you as my Edom,
then that would exclude them.
That would exclude them. Okay, now we have here. Just one second. Oh, we have here in the laws of Edus and Choshe Mishpat a statement of the Shach. You know about the Shach. He was about 4.5 centuries ago. He was Shabsei Kohen. He was considered like almost like a Rishon. In any event, he says the following: the Mishnah says Bifanenu Hodolo. Achiyomer Bifanenu Hodolo. He says Kasha. Let's ask the fine question. Meduyak b'mishnah, we can be medayk from the extra Bifanenu Hodolo. That Tzarech Lomar Atem Edai, so that the Nitba will not be able to say that I'll give you another reason, an explanation, an alibi, so to speak, as to why I admitted that I own the money. Maybe I didn't want people to think I'm rich, and we mentioned that yesterday. But when Rabbi Yehuda says, Tzarech Lomar Atem Edai, that already comes under a different halacha. That is, in order to exclude, again, if not for Atem Edai, to exclude the following possibility. And that is that the Nitba could say, Meshata Ani Bach. Okay, this is a Gemara that we're about to learn called Meshata Ani Bach. I was being silly about it. So what is it? When the Mishnah says, Bifaneinu Hodalo, is that a requirement simply so that the Lova won't claim that I admitted for other reasons, you know, I didn't want to look like a rich person? And that would seem to be sufficient from the perspective of the language of the Mishnah, but Rabbi Yehuda seems to have gone one step further, that you require Atem Edai so that the Nitba will not be able to say that the statement I made was just a joke. It was Meshata Nibach. So let me read to you the Shach. The Shach says the following. Basefa, right, we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Ad sheyomar lo, what was the language? Ad sheyomru bifaneinu hodalo shuchayv masayim zuz. Hoda also haisa bifnea tovea. The love confessed in the presence of the Malve. So that the word Bifanenu refers not just to the Edim, but also to the Tovea. That's how the Shach understands the word Bifanenu. V'im Kain, if that be the case, then Eino Yochol Liton Shahoda Kedesh Lo Yichashvu Shu Asher. In the presence of others, he might say, well, I owe some money, you know, I have a lien, and I have a mortgage, and so forth and so on, I owe the bank. That he might say, so he doesn't look like a rich guy. But in the presence of the Tovea, in other words, if he's responding to the Tovea, that gives it a whole different ambiance. You know, that's not what he's saying to other people, that I owe money. He's telling the Tovea, yes, I owe you money. And therefore, when the Mishnah says, Bifaneinu Hodalo, it doesn't say, Bifaneinu Amarlo. It doesn't say, a Lashon of Amira. So let's again, we go back to the Mishnah. I just want to make sure that we read the Mishnah carefully. Omar Blo, Heichata Yodea, how do you know? Im Omar, if he says the aid, again, taking one witness at a time, he says, Omar Li, Shani Chayavlo Lish Ploni, Omar Li Shu Chayavlo. So in the second case, Omar Li, we're talking about aid me pi aid. But in the first case, he says, Omar Li, the aid says, he told me, Shani Chayavlo. And then it says, Ad sheyomer bifaneinu hodolo. So it could be that the Mishnah is actually addressing two different scenarios. In the first scenario, Omar Li, the aid says he told me that he owes money, Le'ish Ploni. Ish Ploni means to so-and-so, but that so-and-so is not standing here in front of us. Do you follow me? So all I have now in the room is I have the Lova and the Edim. And the Lova says to the Edim, Ani Chayavlo, Le'ish Ploni, I owe such a person money. No one else is in the room. But then the Mishnah repeats itself and says, Achiyomru, Achiyomar, again, when it says Shiyomar, it means one aid, but it means both aid. Bifanenu Hodolo, Shu Chayavlo. So you think that in the Sefer, we're talking about a case where the Tovea is present. But if that be the case, he says the Shach, Madu Nokaratana Bifanenu Hodolo Velo Bifanenu Omarlo. Do you see what he's asking? He's bothered by the language of the Mishnah. It says Bifanenu Hodolo. Bifanenu Hodolo.
Should have been Hodolana. if it's not
right,
it's not
or it yeah. Should, yeah, if the tove is there, he says it should have said Omar lo. In other words, what makes the Oda into Oda in such a way that he cannot claim that, you know, he only said it that he shouldn't look like a rich person? It's the fact that the tove was right there, present in front of him. So then, the Mishnah should have been more clear about that by saying Bifanenu Omar lo. Meaning, in our presence, he, the lova, said to him, meaning to the lova. And in fact, in that case, the Mishnah would have been consistent, because previously it says in the Mishnah, "Hu Amar Li." So use the word Amira. Right. Oh, Elavadai says the Shach. Why did the Mishnah change its language, and why does it say Bifanenu Hodolo and not Amar Lo? The Mishnah wants to teach us a new Chiddush that we wouldn't have had if we would have just said Omar lo vahu. She'im lo Omar lo ya Omar derech hoda af shevadai lo ayachol liton kidei shelo yechshavu li ashir. He says that even if we could exclude the possibility of the lova saying, I only said it because I don't want people to think I'm rich, which means he said it in the presence of the tovea, then nevertheless, it's not binding. Why? Because it's not enough to exclude the possibility that this admission was a fabrication only to make sure that people didn't think he was rich. We also need that it be derech hodah. He says, "Af shebevadai lo ayachol liton sha'omar kidei shalok shivuli ashir," because again, it's in front of the tovea. So he, the lov, is talking to the malva. He's not trying to show whether he's rich or not rich. So that argument and that explanation is not valid. But nevertheless, ayachol liton sha'omar derech hashta. There still is another possibility of what's called derech hoshta. Hoshta means like it was a joke. I didn't mean it seriously.
Shtus.
Right, the Lashon shtus. Derech schok. He says, lachain, therefore the Tana went out of his way to use a language of hoda, because unless it was b'fanenu hodolo, hodolo means b'lashon hoda. In other words, the language that he was using is clearly indicative that this is a formal, serious, and binding admission on his part. The achra v'efshal liton hashta, and afterwards it's impossible for the lover to say, I was just joking around. Now the Gemara says, misayeh alei l'Rabbi Yehuda, I can prove Rabbi Yehuda's conclusion that we have to have atem edai. And atem edai is significant because otherwise the lover could say meshata nibach. Kol shelo hoda b'loshen hoda. So everything here is about loshen hoda. Again, if you want to exclude the possibility that the lova was just saying it so that people shouldn't think he's wealthy, all you need is the presence of the tovea. And that was the first part of the Mishnah, the resha of the Mishnah, when the aid says, Omar li shani chayav lo li'ish ploni. That's unacceptable because the tovea wasn't there, and therefore if he made the statement in front of the others, it might be that he just wants to, you know, give the impression that he's not a rich person. So that the Mishnah's already told me, that we need the presence of the tovea there. Now once there's a presence of the tovea there, I've excluded Kidei Shelo Yomru Asher Li, but I still have a possibility that even in the presence of tovea, it was Meshat Anibach. He was only saying it as a joke. He wasn't really serious about it. So now we have to upgrade it from the level of Amira to the level of Hoda, which is called Derech Hoda. Derech Hoda means it wasn't just nonchalant, it wasn't just joking, it was very serious. He was responding to a Tviya, and it was like an official response. And that's called Derech Hoda, and that's why the Mishnah changes its language here, Achiyomar, until it is Bifanenu Hodolo. Hodolo means not only low in the presence of the tovea to exclude the possibility that he's only making sure that nobody thinks he's rich, but it's also got to be hodolo. He's got to say it to the malve as a derech hoda, and that's to exclude the possibility of meshat anibach. Says the Shach, that's why the Gemara thinks that our Mishnah is a siyua, it's a proof to Rabbi Yehuda. Because the whole thrust of Rabbi Yehuda's statement, his ruling, that the Lov has to say Atem Edai, is to make sure that we jack it up from what could be interpreted as Meshata Nibach, as just a joking around, to a real formal serious Hodah. How do we achieve that goal? Atem Edai. So the whole thrust of the Mishnah is to add a new element to this Amira. It's no longer Amira, because Amira could be an Amira without the Tovea there. It could be an Amira Lacher, which means he just doesn't want to look wealthy. An Amira could be even in the presence of the Tovea, but it could be Meshat Anibach, that Amira was not serious. We have to jack it up to the level of what? Hodah. And Hodah means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, how do we bridge the gap between an Amira and make it into Hodah? We need Atem Edai. And once it becomes Hodah, then there's no possibility of Meshat Anibach. So again, we're dealing with two, we're trying to exclude, in order to make this Hodah spelled invalid and binding, we have to exclude two possibilities. One level, we have to exclude the possibility of Ashir, and another level, we have to exclude the possibility of Meshat Anibach. To exclude the possibility of Ani Ashir, all we need is the presence of the Tovea. That's called Omer Lo. But that's not enough, because we still have to exclude the possibility of Meshat Anibach. Even though he's talking to the Tovea, he's not trying to show that he's a poor person, but nevertheless, he might be just joking around. He's not really serious about it. And to make it into serious, we have to give it a gishpank, we have to give it the status of a hodah. How do we make it into hodah? The Gemara says, Mesayele the Rabbi Yehuda ad shiyomar atem edai. That's the shach. Itmar Nami, the Gemara now quotes another Amora who agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. And you require atem edai. Omer abchiyo bar ab, omer ab yochanan. I'm going to read it with the parentheses. Hatovea, mona. Yeshli biyadcha, he demands a mana, the Amar Lo, and his friend responds, Hain, you're right, and Lamachar, Amar Lo, Tneuli, so to the next day the Tovei says, well, pay up, cough it up, as we say. Amar, now the Nitva says to him that what I said to you yesterday, Meshat Anibach, I was just joking around. It was Derech Schok, that's called Hashtah. His partner, the Nitva, is off the hook. We cannot be mechayev him because it's not a real hodah. It's an amira, but it's not hodah. Why? Because he didn't say atem edai. And that, in the absence of atem edai, the lova could always say hodesi lecha derech schok. Now, later we're going to address the following question: does the lova himself have to say to the bezdin that I was just joking around, or can Bezdin automatically assume that he was joking around? In other words, does Bezdin put these words into his mouth, Ki'ilu, the Lov himself said, oh, I was just joking? Or the Lov himself has to come forward and say to the Dayonim, I was just joking? Now, after we've quoted both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, now we quote a Braisa. And the Braisa also indicates that we need Atem Edai. Mana li biyodcha, the Tovea says to the Lova, you owe me a mana. Amar lo, the Nitva says Hain. Ulamach Amar lo, the Nitva says Tneuli. The Tovea says to the Lova, Tneuli, pay me up. Amar lo, Meshat Anibach. What I said to you yesterday was just a joke. Potter, the Nitva doesn't have to pay. Vlo od. And furthermore, says the Braisa, El Afilu, even if Hichmin Lo, even if the Malve, Hichmin means he hid two witnesses, Me'achore Agoder, you know, they were behind the fence, and the Nitba did not see the Edim, but the Edim heard and saw that the Tovea said to the Nitba, you owe me money. The Amar Lo, and the after the Tovea said Mana Li Biot Amar Lo, the Nitva says to the Malve, Hain. And then the Tovea says to him, Ritzoncha Shetode Bifnei Ploni Uploni, would you be willing to offer your admission in the presence of these two Edim, Reuven and Shimon? Amar lo, so the Nitpa says, no, I don't want to be mowed in front of two Eidim. Misyari ani, shematach peini lidin. Maybe you'll force me to come to a courtroom and you'll be able to convince the court that I owe you the money because I admitted or I agreed and consented to invite these two Eidim. So then, l'mocher amalo tnei uliv amalo mishat ani boch potur, says the Braisa, that since the Lova did not consent to appoint these two witnesses to testify about his hodah, then his hodah lends itself to Meshata Ani Bach. Now again, what is the Omar Lo? The Nitba, what does it mean, the Omar Lo? Meshata Ani Bach. What do you learn from the Omar Lo? That the Lo itself has to say it, and the Gemara says that it means that we're not going to put these words into the mouth of the loaf. In other words, we have every reason to assume, since the Tovea said to the Nitba, you owe me money, and the Edom saw this, that the Lova was serious when he said, yes, I do owe you money. Unless the Lova comes forward and says the magic words, this is the magic formula, Meshat Ani Bach, I was only joking around with you. Again, in the case where the Lovid agrees to have the two Edim to witness his Hodah, then he cannot say, Meshatani Bach, you know, I was joking around with you. But in a case where he did not agree to have these two Edim testify about his Hodah, then he has a right to say, Meshatani Bach, are we going to put the words into his mouth? No. Now, the last three words in this Braisa are going to occupy our minds for a while, because l'chora they have nothing to do with the rest of the braisa whatsoever. This is called Ein Tonim L'Mesis. What's a mesis? A mesis is a person who invited and he allured people, he attracted people to worship a certain idol. You know, he said to them, hey, this idol is really good stuff. I mean, I became rich overnight when I prayed to this idol. Come and join me. He's called a mesis. And the halach is that a mesis is put to death. And what if the mesis has certain arguments? You know, he could say, well, I didn't mean it, I didn't listen. He had all sorts of arguments that he could put forward. I never thought they would listen to me. Well, ain't toanim lemesis, meaning Beis Din is not going to get involved and become the defense attorney. They're not self-appointed lawyers to bring forth any sort of counterclaim to justify the mesis. The Mesis himself, if he comes forward with a taina, with a claim, then we'll have to judge it, and that's gonna require Bezdin of Chaf Gimel. But Bezdin will not take the initiative. So the Gemara right away asks on this price, a Mesis, Mandekar Shmei, oh, this is classic. Mandekar Shmei, if you haven't learned this in the past, now's a good time. Write it in your lexicon, because this appears all over Shas. Mandekar Shmei, which means who mentioned his name, meaning why is this relevant? You know, if you give me an introduction and you want to quote certain details, that's fine, but there's no background, there's no introduction. Ma'adakar Shmei. It's like, you know, I'll give you not a good equation, a bad equation, but the Pasuk says, Vayomer Shabbat from Lech Lecha Ve'artzecha. So the Medrash says, Ma'adakar Shmei. I mean, who is this Avram Avinu? And all of a sudden, without any background information, the Torah says that God appears to Avraham Avinu, reveals himself and says to him, get the heck out of here. Go to the land that I'll tell you to go to. Ma'adakar Shmei. Who mentioned the name of Avraham Avinu? So the Medrash answers that this was the Avraham Avinu that agreed to be thrown into the Kivshan Eish. You know? So Ma'adakar Shmei, give me some background over here. All of a sudden you jump into the laws of Mesis. What am I learning? Masechta Avodah Zarah. I got enough on my head with Masechta Sanhedrin and add brachas to boot. So the Gemara answers, again, a very classic phrase that appears all over Shas. You should write this down. Chisurei Mechsera. That our girsa, our text is incomplete. And when it comes to a Braisa, by the way, Chisurei Mechsera is like left, right, and center. We always have Chisurei Mechsera and a Braisa. And by the way, Chisurei Mechsera is based on a premise of what's called Eis La'asos Lashem, that really you're not allowed to write Torah Shebal Peh, you're not allowed to commit it to writing. But Rebbe said, all right, Eis La'asos Lashem, we have to do it, Hei Feiru So Sech, but we're going to try to be as abridged as we possibly can. But Rahachi Tani, here's the way you have to interpret this brisa. In Lo Tan, in event that the Lova himself did not come forward and put the argument forth and say, Meshata Yisi Bach, that when I was Moda, I wasn't serious, I was just in a joking mood, is Ein Tohen in Lo. Bezdin is not going to put forth that taina on his behalf. He, the Lova, has to come forward and explain away his Hodah. And if he doesn't explain away his Hodah, then basically he's accepting, you know, the Eidim testified that he made this Hodah, he admitted he owes money, and that's binding. Ubedine Nefashos, and in Dine Nefashos, we have halacha of Tohanim Lo. What is Tohanim Lo? Let's say a person, bless you, a person is on trial to be condemned for a death penalty. So in, you know, in monetary law, if the Lova owes the money and he's going to say, well, I don't owe you the money, we have to wait till he says, I deny it. And he has to explain what his Odo is all about. But in the case of someone who's on trial, is about to be condemned to death, is Afal Gav D'lo Tohan, if the person on trial didn't put forward a taina, is Tohanim Lo. Bezdin becomes Bezdin now serves as a self-appointed, a defense attorney? Is that a good phrase? Mm-hmm. And they have to defend this is based, by the way, on Pasuk in Mishlei of all places. The Pasuk in Mishlei says Psach Picha Le'ilem, which literally means open the mouth of a mute. Sometimes a person is so overwhelmed, or he's not aware of his legal rights, or he doesn't remember the nuances of the case, that he thinks he's an Ilem. He becomes like a mute person, and we have to open up the mouth of the mute. And that means that we Bezdin have to put forward arguments on his behalf, because he doesn't know how to taina his own taina to defend himself. But herein lies the difference between Dine Mamonos and Dine Nefashos. In the case of Mamon, it's always possible to get the money back. It's reversible. But when it comes to a Nefesh, if we put him to death, that's irreversible. And therefore, we have to be very careful. And we have to look and see if we can come up with some sort of defense arguments, the tainus, and then we'll judge them and see if we can prove them or reject them. And furthermore, when a person is being condemned to death in a court, then he's always in a state of charada. His mind is not crystal clear. He forgets what may have been a legal taina. He's not composed. But in the case of Mammon, if somebody is suing you for Mammon, he says, well, you borrowed 1,000, you didn't pay me back. In such a case, the Nitba has all his marbles collected, his seichel is sharp, and he's able to taina for himself. The dayan doesn't have to come up with arguments and put them in the mouth of the mute, because he's not mute. But in the case of a really scary condemnation, I don't know if anybody here would ever even dream of being on trial for death. I mean, I can't even, in my mind, I can't even imagine it. It's like when I think about the Holocaust, I can't even imagine it. It's like beyond my, I start going out of my kelim when I start thinking what was going on. So in that state of Bahala, he's not clear, he's not composed to come up with arguments that maybe would let him off the hook. So we're gonna he's a mute, and then Psach Pisa, we're gonna put the arguments in his face. But there's one case of a person who is on trial for possibly a capital punishment, and if he's condemned, and we don't put any arguments forth, and that's a mesis. Afal gav de lo ton tainin lo. That's the general rule with all dine miso, all capital cases, with one exception: ein ton in lemesis. We do not put arguments forth to defend and protect the interests of the mesis. He's on trial, and even though it's a condemnation for death, because the Torah says that a mesis is chayv skila, he'll be stoned to death. Nevertheless, ein tohen in lemesis. We will not put any arguments forth on his behalf. He has to come up with his arguments on his own. So the Gemara right away asks, Maishna mesis. Why is mesis different than all other capital cases when a person is on trial and he's being accused of a capital crime, and we put arguments forth in his favor to defend him? Omer Abchama bar Chanina, he says that I heard this in Pirkei de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Shmilei. I heard it from Rabbi Chiya bar Abba in one of his drushos. He gave a halachic presentation, And he says, Shani Mesis, the Rachmona Omar, the Torah says in the Parsha of Mesis, Lo Sachmol Velo Sachape, Lo Sachase Olav. We have no compassion on this Mesis. We will not cover up for him. And why did the Torah have to say that? I mean, in all other condemnations for death in capital cases, the Torah didn't add, don't have any compassion on him. Don't cover up for him. And the answer is, says Rabbi Chia, to teach us that Ein Tonim L'Zchusa, that we will not come up with any arguments on his behalf. He has to defend himself. We're not going to defend him. Now, the Gemara, for some reason, I'm not sure exactly why, is not satisfied with this interpretation of the Pasuk, and therefore it looks for another source, another basis for this halacha of Rabbi Chia, that Ein Tonim L'Mesis. In other words, we're not arguing against Rabbi Chia, we're accepting Rabbi Chia, Ein Tonim L'Mesis, but we're rejecting his source. And we're going to have to find an alternative source. Now, what's the weak point, the weak link in this drasha, in this derivation? It sounds to me very convincing. Lo sachmo v'lo sachase olav. Ein Tonim L'Mesis. But it could be that lo sachmo v'lo sachase olav is a reference to something else, what's called lahapech b'schuso. What does that mean, lahapech b'schuso? The law is that when the Sanhedrin sits in judgment, they have an obligation to be mahapech b'schuso, meaning they have to check out and imagine any possible mitigating circumstance, any possible reason why the accused might be spared from the death penalty. And in the case of a Mesis, we're not going to come up with new possibilities. That's called Eino Mahapik Peskuso. That halach is suspended. But we still don't know that we have to sit there, the judges have to sit there like lemmicles. They have to sit there like, passive, machines, so to speak, and just listen to what the evidence is on the Eidim that testify. Maybe they could take an active role and just put forth a claim. In other words, they're not going to look for new justifications, but maybe they could put forth a claim. And it could be that Rabbi Chia derives from this pasuk because it's a double language of the pasuk. It says, Lo tachmol v'lo sechasa olav. A double language. The first Lo Sachmo is telling me that we don't have to be Mahapik B'Schuso. We don't have to come up with new possibilities. Maybe he was a shogeg, maybe he was an ones, maybe he slipped on a banana peel. We don't have to do that in the case of a Mesis. But Lo Sachasolov means we cannot put forth arguments on his behalf. So what is the second possible source? Omer Rab Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, Omer Rabbi Yonis, Aminayin Shein Tonim L'Mesis. How do we know that we don't put forth a taina on behalf of the Mesis? He has to come up with his own taina. Minochash HaKadmoni. The Pasuk says in Breishis that the Nochash seduced Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas. The Omer Rab Siloi, Harbe Tainis Reilo L'Nochash Lito. The Nochash could have come up with many, many defense arguments. Velotan, and he didn't come up with this. Why should we put it up on his behalf? Why not Kodesh Baruch Hu offer arguments and mitigating judgment arguments to spare the Nochash from the terrible punishment? Lefishalotan hu atzmo, because he himself, the Nochash, did not come up with this argument. So we see that Kodesh Baruch Hu is not going to come up with arguments, even though there are many arguments that could defend the Nochash. But nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not put forth any of these arguments, Lotan Hu, because the Nochash himself did not put forth these arguments. So immediately the Gemara asks, "My Havilei LeMeimar, are you telling me that there were arguments that God Almighty could have put forth in defense of the Nochash? What arguments could have? Divrei HaRav, Divrei HaTam, Divrei Mishomim, Divrei HaRav Shomim." In other words, the Nochash gave an Eitzah to Chava to eat from the Eitzah Das. Well, God commanded Chava not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. So who's she going to listen to? She listened to me? I'm just a snaky guy. She should be listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if I never thought that she would listen to me, so you're telling me I'm a Mesis, you know, hey, if I know that you're a poor guy and all I think that you can, well, you just have to worship an idol and you'll become rich, you know, the money's going to be showered forth from the heavens, okay, that's a real Mesis. But in a case where I think that she's not going to listen to me, who am I? I mean, God commanded her not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. It was the only command that she got from God. I didn't even think she would listen to me. Don't call me a Mesis. She made that decision on her own. And it's interesting. Once the Gemara mentions the parasha, the episode of the Nachash, and how he was able to seduce Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas, the Gemara adds another point about how really the Nachash was successful. Why did she listen to the Divrei HaTalmud and not to the Divrei HaRav? Omar Chizkia, minayin shekol ha-mosif goreya shenemar. It says in the pasuk, I'll read the whole pasuk, Mipri ha-eis ha-sher besoch ha-gan, Omar lakim lo sochlu mimenu velo sigu bo pentamusun. Nowhere did God command the Adam and Chava that they shouldn't touch the Eitz Hadas, but the Nachash added it. Very clever guy. He added Lo Sigu Bo. And the reason he did so is because he was hoping that she would first start by touching the Eitz Hadas. She would see that nothing happened. She didn't get zapped. And right away she would see, okay, you know, if God is not so serious about this, he didn't, you know, God said Pentamusun, and I didn't drop dead. I held the pre in my hand, or whatever the pre was, we don't know exactly. It wasn't an apple, by the way, that's for sure. Anyway, so she, you know, once she saw that the violation of Negia did not generate any meat, so she didn't die from it, she thought that I'm not going to die even if I eat it. And this is the way he seduced her to eat it, by adding and expanding the Easter. So a lot of people like to expand the Easter. It's not always a good idea. My mother-in-law, Solzhan Gesund, she tells me that back in her youth in Europe, there were people who went off the derech. Why? They would violate the Shabbos and nothing happened to them. You know, they thought, well, I'm going to violate the Shabbos, I'm going to be zapped from heaven, and no lightning struck me. So they came to the conclusion the whole thing is Bava Maisa. And that's how people went off the deck. It sounds so primitive to us. I mean, who in our generation would think that, okay, if I violate the Shabbos, I'm going to drop dead on the spot. I'm going to be punished on the spot. But in those days, when they wanted to put the fear of the Lord in you, they told you, you know, if you violate the Shabbos, you're going to die. So they thought, well, I'm going to die on the spot. So she thought, you know, if she touches the Eitz Hadas, and then God commanded Lo Sigu Bo, that she would die, Pentamusun. And guess what? She's healthy and breathing well, and she's holding on to the Pri. Well, if God didn't care about the fact that I held on to the Pri and violated Lo Sigu Bo, I might as well eat the Pri. And that's the way the Nachash got her to eat from the Eitz Hadas. However, the Gemara quotes two other opinions as to where, from whence we derive this principle of Kol HaMosif Goreya. It's not always a good idea to add anything. First, Marv Mishar Shiomer Mehocha Posek in Shmos. It says, Amasayim V'Chetzi Arko. These are the middos of the Aron HaBris, which house the Luchos. Now, if somebody would write the word Amasayim without the Aleph, and it would read Masayim, you read it Mem Tov Yud Mem, then it would mean Masayim as a what's called Chaser. Chaser means that sometimes the Torah leaves out a letter. Nimtza Shemosif ala Mila Lichtov Osnosef is Goreas Midl Sa'armi Masayim Amal Shte Amos. So it's really interesting that if you change the word Amasayim Vachetzi Arko and you write it without the Aleph Masayim, then it means Masayim Chaser, and he's adding now an addition which unfortunately is going to lead to the opposite conclusion. It's Kol HaMosif Goreya. Now again, this is a little bit strange because we said Kol HaMosif Goreya where you add something. That was the case of the Nachash who added Lo Sigu Bo. But here in Rav Masharshi's frame of reference, it says Amasayim V'Chetzi Arko. And if I'm not mistaken, just double check me, that's how it's written in the Torah, with an Aleph, am I correct?
Yeah.
I have it here in the Torah, or let me just double check it. Where is it? Okay, I don't see it. So it says, Amasayim, with an Aleph. So what did he do? Let's just take a look at Rashi here for a second. Amasayim, the last two lines, Dal Aleph. See, you drop the Aleph, Mehacha, and as a result of dropping the Aleph, Kari Bey.
Masayim.
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 Havishtemios Amo.
Yeah, it's 200. It'll be 200 and a half.
Instead
of. Instead of
two
and a half.
Two and a half, it becomes 200
and a half. Masayim Vachetzi.
Right, so but what? I don't understand why it calls a Mosif.
It's not a Mosif Korei, it's a Korei Mosif.
Right, does Rav Steinsaltz add anything to this Rashi?
Yeah.
Does Rav Steinsaltz add anything? This is perfect for Rav Steinsaltz. This is Mamish up his alley.
By adding, you reduce.
Let's just see. Kola Osio Shebat Torah.
He says the same thing.
He Havarasam Kiksi Vasam. Kamo Vasisa Via Marta. Kilu Kasu Behe. It's a whole kinds of business here in Rashi. Oh, we're going to have to read the beer on Rashi. I have a beer on Rashi in the back of the Masifta. But somehow this is considered Kol Amosif Korea. So I don't know exactly.
They added the letter Aleph and it reduced it from 200.
Why? In the Torah it doesn't say it with an Aleph? That's what I need to know.
No. Oh. By adding the Aleph, you reduce. If you didn't have the Aleph.
Oh, I mean the Torah had to add the Aleph.
Yeah.
But what?
And by adding the Aleph, it reduced the length from 200 and a half to 2.5.
Oh, I see what you're saying. In other words, when Rashi says he left out the Aleph, Rashi means to say that the Torah itself could have left out the Aleph because of Kriyuk Siv, and you would still read it Masayim, but the answer is no. The Torah had to add the Aleph because Masayim would indicate 200, and Amasayim means 2 instead of 200. Okay,
no, but
I'll accept that. That's good. Yeah. Anything there in the art school?
Same thing.
Yeah? Read it to me if you don't mind.
Rashi. Says by adding the first letter, the Torah lessened the meaning of the word to a mere 2.5 cubits.
Oh, I see. Good. So it's the Torah. See, because when I read the Rashi, it says Dal Aleph Mihocha.
Right. If you remember,
and he writes in the Masifta Im Yichtov Adam Esavila. I got confused because I thought what he meant to say was that it says I'm a Simon in the Torah, and he wants to leave out the Aleph. So that didn't make any sense because that's not called a Moses, but it means that the Torah could have left out the Aleph because we would have read it Masayim even without the Aleph. Rav Ashi Yomar Ashtei Esrei Yirios. Another minute and I'll be finished. I have to fill in for Rabbi Meyer's head. Ashtei Esrei Yirios. So we're talking about 11 Yirios in the Mishkan. This is in Shmos Chavav. And if a person would remove the Ayin, then it becomes Shtei Esrei Yirios. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So if it would have said Shtei Esrei, instead of Ashtei Esrei, instead of 11, it would be 12.
Right.
So he would be Mosif Achas Al Hamila. Just 1 second. If he what? If he drops
the
Aleph.
Lose the Aleph.
It's Goreas HaMispar. So why is this called Mosif? Once again, I get stuck with the same question. Why is that called Mosif? If we're talking about someone who. Again, we're talking about the Torah once again?
Because you take away the ayin.
Oh, I see. The Torah by adding the ayin.
Right.
Again, you know. He misleads me. He says, "Im yigra adam." You know, it sounds like he's addressing a person who leaves out the ayin. It means the Torah could have left out the ayin. Had the Torah left out the ayin, then instead of reading it as a chasis ray, it's called a gorea, called a mosu. Oh, yeah. By adding the ayin, it means 11 instead of 12. So called a mosif, the Torah added the ayin, and yet it means 11. It's a little misleading because in the case of the Nachash, he added something and that caused the whole.
This adds too. If you take away the Aleph, you take away the Ayin, you're adding from 2 to 200, and you're adding from 11 to 12.
Right, no, I understand. I'm just trying to point out, yeah. This is a moral, ethical lesson that called Mosif Goreah. And it's very strange because he's telling me, Rav Mesharsha, Rav Ashi, that if the Torah would have left out a letter, then it would have jacked up the number.
Yeah.
Right? It would have jacked up the number. But that's only a remez. You know, the Nachash, the Chizkiyah's right for the Nachash, I think, is a lot sharper because then it becomes an ethical message.
He says almost time, Vav.
More is less.
The Vav is the extra letter.
Oh, the Vav.
Almost time, Chetzi Arko. So if almost time is Chetzi Arko, then it's really four.
And by adding the Vav, it becomes
two and a half.
So instead of
more.